All right, welcome back everybody to the deep dive. We're going to be jumping into a pretty big case actually in corporate law. It's Terry v. Penn Central Corporation. And lucky for us, we've got a good brief of the case here, some good analysis to go off of. And yeah, basically what we want to do as always is boil it down to, you know, what do you really need to know about this case, especially if you're, you know, in law school, just trying to get a handle on corporate law.
Yeah, I think that's a great goal for our deep dive today. You know, we really want to help give law students the tools to understand a case that kind of lays out the limitations on shareholder rights.
Yeah.
Particularly in, well, in triangular mergers under Pennsylvania law. So that's what we're looking at here. You know, we're asking ourselves, what are the limitations on shareholder rights? Really, specifically, the right to a class vote and appraisal rights when we're looking at a triangular merger under Pennsylvania law.
Okay, so right off the bat, we've said triangular merger a couple times. I think, you know, for people who aren't familiar, we should probably break down exactly what that is before we get too far into it.
Yeah. So think of it this way. You've got a parent company, right? And in this case, our parent company is Penn Central. Now, Penn Central wants to acquire another company, which in this case is Colt Industries.
Okay.
But instead of just directly merging with Colt Industries, what Penn Central does is they create a whole new subsidiary company.
Oh, interesting.
This subsidiary is PCC Holdings.
Okay.
And it's PCC Holdings that actually merges with Colt. So the parent company, Penn Central, kind of stays separate.
Okay, so why go this route? Why do this whole, like, I don't know, roundabout way of acquiring a company? What's the thinking there?
So there are a couple of reasons, right? And our sources lay out a couple of them for us. One reason is to shield the parent company from liabilities. Right. So Penn Central doesn't necessarily want to be, you know, directly liable for anything that Colt Industries might have going on.
Makes sense.
But the other reason, which is kind of important in this Terry case, is that it might allow the parent company to actually sidestep certain shareholder approval requirements.
Okay. So, and in this case, we have these shareholders, right? Howard Terry and W.H. Hunt.
Right.
These are the guys that, you know, are not happy about this merger going down. So what did they try to do? What was their, like, their plan of attack here?
So these shareholders, Terry and Hunt, they're Penn Central shareholders, and they're not exactly thrilled about this merger with Colt Industries.
Right.
So they essentially make two arguments or two claims. Okay. One is that they deserve a class vote on the merger.
Okay.
And the other is that they have what are called appraisal rights.
Okay.
Meaning that if this merger goes through, you know, against their wishes, they should be able to have their shares valued and bought out at a fair price.
Gotcha. Okay. So let's break those down, those arguments down one by one. So the first one being their right to a class vote, what were they basing that on? What was their argument there?
So they were looking at Penn Central's own articles of incorporation.
Okay.
Right. These are like the governing documents of the company. And they argued that the articles granted certain voting rights to, they're called the first series preference stockholders.
Okay.
We can assume Terry and Hunt fell into this category.
Yeah.
And they basically said, hey, you know, this merger, this proposed merger with Colt, even though it's through a subsidiary, this should trigger those special voting rights that we have.
Okay. So, but the court didn't agree with that?
Right. The court, they said no.
What was their reasoning there? What did they see in those articles of incorporation that made them decide that?
So the court looked very carefully at the wording in those articles, right? They dug into those details.
Right.
And what they decided was that the special voting rights in those articles only kicked in. They were only triggered if the first series preference stockholders were directly affected by whatever action the company was taking.
Okay.
And so in this case, right, because it was PCC Holdings, that subsidiary that was merging with Colt, not Penn Central itself, the court said, well, look, you know, you're not being directly affected here.
Right, right. It's like one step removed. It's not their shares directly that are being affected.
Yeah, it's kind of like a downstream effect, right?
Yeah.
It's not an immediate impact on their actual shares in Penn Central.
Okay, so that makes sense. Let's move on to the next argument. The right to dissent and receive an appraisal.
Okay.
So what was their argument there?
So this argument is about the Pennsylvania Business Corporation law.
Okay.
And generally, this law gives shareholders what are called dissenters' rights, or sometimes they're called appraisal rights. And basically what this means is that if you're a shareholder and you don't like a certain, you know, fundamental corporate change, like a merger, you have the right to have your shares independently valued.
Oh.
And then the corporation has to buy them from you at that appraised value. So it's kind of like a protection, right?
Yeah.
For shareholders who disagree with a major decision.
Okay, so what did the court say about that argument? Did they think those rights applied here?
So again, the court kind of took a really strict view.
Okay.
They said, look, the Pennsylvania law granting these appraisal rights, it specifically limits them to shareholders of corporations that are actual parties to the merger.
Okay.
And just like with that class vote issue, they said, well, Penn Central's not a direct party here. It's PCC Holdings.
Right, right. So because they're not technically merging, the shareholders don't get those rights. It seems formalistic. Like they're really focusing on the letter of the law, right?
Right. And I think that's a fair point. The court definitely stuck to that literal interpretation of party to the merger.
Yeah.
But the shareholders, they weren't done yet. They brought up another legal idea called the de facto merger doctrine.
Okay.
Have you heard of this?
Yeah, de facto merger. So it's kind of like, even if it doesn't, you know, look like a merger on paper, if it's a merger in practice, then maybe it should be treated as a merger.
Exactly. The de facto merger doctrine is all about looking beyond just the formal structure of the deal.
Right.
And instead looking at the actual economic impact. So Basically it says, hey, you know, sometimes a transaction, even if it's structured as something else, like, you know, a sale of assets, or in this case, this triangular merger.
Yeah.
It should be treated as a merger for the purpose of protecting shareholder rights.
Right.
Because the idea is, you know, we don't want companies to be able to just sidestep these protections by picking some other fancy legal structure that, you know, ultimately achieves the same result.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So were Terry and Hunt basically arguing that, you know, even though technically it's a subsidiary, this is basically a merger of Penn Central and Colt.
That's exactly it. They were saying, look, at the end of the day, Penn Central is getting control of Colt Industries.
Right.
You know, using the subsidiary, that's just a technicality.
Yeah.
The reality is this is a huge change for Penn Central and its shareholders.
Yeah.
But the court, once again, did not agree.
Okay. So why not? Why did they reject this argument too?
So the court pointed out that in Pennsylvania, this whole de facto merger doctrine, it's got a pretty limited scope.
Okay.
Especially after some changes that were made to the Pennsylvania Business Corporation Law back in 1959.
Mm.
So the court pointed to these amendments and they said, look, these were meant to actually, like, you know, limit the use of this doctrine and make it clearer when appraisal rights would actually apply.
Okay. So the legislature, they wanted to tighten those rules, huh?
That's how the court saw it, yeah. And they basically said, I mean, for this de facto merger doctrine to even be considered in Pennsylvania, you usually need to show some kind of fraud.
Hmm.
Or what we call fundamental unfairness.
Okay, so but Terry and Hunt, they weren't claiming fraud in this case.
Right. They weren't. And the court also made a point of saying, hey, just because you disagree with the business decision, or even just because you don't get appraisal rights, that doesn't automatically mean it's fundamentally unfair.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So it's not enough to just, you know, say, hey, I think this is a bad deal, or, you know, I think I'm getting the short end of the stick here.
Yeah, it's going to be something more, right?
Yeah.
Like one of our sources actually quotes the court on this saying, poor business judgment isn't enough to constitute unfairness.
Right.
And denying appraisal rights can't in itself be fundamental unfairness.
Okay, so the bar is pretty high then.
Yeah, the court made it very clear that in Pennsylvania, it's not easy to use that de facto merger doctrine, especially after those changes back in 1959.
Right. And our source even points out that the legislature's intent back then was to restrict those rights.
That's right.
Okay, so now we've gone through, you know, those two big arguments. I know there was also something about the proxy statement.
Right.
Can you just really quickly summarize why that argument didn't work out?
So that claim about the proxy statement, it kind of depended on their other claims, right? The class vote and the appraisal rights.
Yeah.
Since the court shot down those arguments, the proxy statement argument kind of fell apart too.
Right. Right. Makes sense. Okay. So we've gone through all that. I mean, Terry v. Penn Central, it seems like it's a really important case, right?
Sure.
Really kind of, you know, lays out these limits of shareholder rights, at least in Pennsylvania, when it comes to these triangular mergers. So why does this case still matter today? Why is it still important for us to understand it?
So this case has become kind of a blueprint our sources actually use that word,
mm-hmm.
for companies that are looking to, you know, maybe try and avoid some pushback from shareholders, especially when they're thinking about mergers. And specifically by using this, you know, triangular merger structure, you know, this case really showed how companies could use this type of structure to, you know, maybe avoid triggering certain class vote requirements or avoid having to deal with, you know, statutory appraisal rights in Pennsylvania.
Okay, so it's a roadmap, you could say, for deal makers.
Yeah, in a way. It really shows how important it is to understand, you know, the exact language of state corporate laws.
Yeah.
And in this case, you know, it was Pennsylvania law, but it could be any state.
Yeah.
And how the courts, you know, interpret things like party to the merger.
Right.
It shows that even a small difference in wording can have a big impact on shareholder rights.
Yeah, yeah. And what about that de facto merger doctrine? What's the big takeaway there?
So, Terry, that decision really solidified, you know, the idea that that this de facto merger doctrine, it doesn't apply very often in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
It's a warning to shareholders, basically, that if you just disagree with a deal, you know, or if you think you're getting a bad deal because of a triangular merger, that's probably not enough to use this doctrine. You know,
yeah.
You've got to show that there was fraud.
Yeah.
Or like some really outrageous level of unfairness.
Okay. So it really, you know, kind of limited the scope of that doctrine in Pennsylvania.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it also seems to touch on a broader point about, you know, how federal courts handle these kinds of cases.
Yeah, for sure. This case went to federal court because of diversity jurisdiction.
Right.
And it shows that even in federal court, the judges are going to stick to state law when they're dealing with state corporate laws.
Yeah.
So even if the federal judge thinks, you know, maybe this isn't the best outcome for the shareholders, they still have to apply the state law as it's written.
Okay, so the takeaway here is if you're involved in mergers, you know, on either side, whether you're, you know, with a company or you're representing shareholders, you really need to understand, you know, all the stuff that Terry v. Penn Central laid out.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's a crucial case.
Yeah.
It shows how important it is to really analyze the structure of these deals and understand both the corporate charters and the specific state laws that apply.
All right. So to wrap things up for our listeners.
Yeah.
You know, what are the really big takeaways? What are the three things that they should walk away remembering from this deep dive into Terry v. Penn Central?
Okay. So I think the big points are, one, triangular mergers, they can be a really useful strategy for companies that want to, you know, kind of manage those shareholder approval and appraisal rights issues.
Okay.
Especially in Pennsylvania. Two, the de facto merger doctrine, it's got a very limited application in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
You got to show more than just, you know, a simple disagreement.
Right.
And then three, you know, it really all comes down to the specific words in the statute and how that state's courts interpret them.
Okay. So state law is king.
Exactly.
All right. Well, for all you law students out there, you know, thinking about corporate law, here's something to think about, you know, after we're done here. We've talked a lot about, you know, protecting shareholders versus, you know, giving companies flexibility to make deals.
Right.
Where do you think the right balance is? You know, should shareholders have more rights in these situations, or should companies have more leeway, you know, especially after Terry v. Penn Central and how, you know, corporate law has changed since then?
Yeah.
What arguments would you make? You know, it's definitely something to consider as you're learning about this whole area of law. Thanks for tuning in to The Deep Dive.
Thanks, everyone.